Go ahead and start today's meeting. Thank you all for being here. We'll start off with the Pledge of Allegiance, and I'll ask Chief Kelly to lead us.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mr. Giordano. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Thank you all for being here. Just a few announcements. For the record, Sheriff Masher and Sheriff Daniels and Deputy Chris Pittman are not in attendance today. I would like to acknowledge and recognize some of our new members. We met our jail administrator last month, Don Bishop from Mojave County. So happy to have him back again. He must not have been too bad. He did come back for round two, so that's, I looked at it as an encouraging sign. We are bringing back Ms. Lisa Weiss as a board member. She's filling the second public member position. She was a previous board member, and Lisa, if you tell us, I don't remember the time period when you were a board member here.
I was a board member from 2011 to 2013, representing the Attorney General.
Okay. Again, she's a lawyer by trade. I think she's in real estate now, but we had a meeting last week. She's got a lot of really good ideas and had a lot of really good questions about the process and what we do here, so I think she's going to be a wonderful fit. And then we also have the Department of Corrections Director, David Shin, joining us this month. Again, we sat down, we're meeting tomorrow again to get some more additional information, but again, I think he'll be a good addition as well. Some consent agenda items. If you look in your packet, consent agenda item for a training deficiency. We can remove Richard Yost from surprise. He has completed his training deficiency and is no longer subject to overview from the board in this matter. We can also pull, if you look at on your new cases, which is case number one, which is 19-070 for Timothy J. Viardi. We can pull that. His lawyer has requested paperwork to begin the voluntary relinquishment process. So we have not received the final paperwork yet. If for some reason that does not go through, we will bring the case back to a future board agenda. And then just for your records, if you look at final case number one for Tyler Knight, Steve Jacobs is the compliance specialist. However, he is out of the office, so Lori Waite will be covering that case, as well as Steve's two cases under the new cases, which are case number four for Nicholas Horn and case number five for Leslie Warren. And that's just administrative. And Mr. Chairman, that ends my introductions and announcements. If you'd like, I can proceed right into my director's report.
Please do.
And just a few, I mentioned last month that we had extended an offer of employment to a front desk administrative assistant to take the place of Nina O'Connor after her retirement. I'm happy to say that Rita Mae Schaefer has accepted. She has successfully passed the background process and will begin with us on the 27th of this month. So moving forward, we'll have the front desk staffed again, and we're excited to have her. She'll be working underneath the training side of the house because we believe that in addition to the front desk duties, she'll be able to assist our training staff with different tasks. I'd also like to announce that just prior to Christmas, Steve Entman, one of our training supervisors, a retiree from DPS, submitted his two-week notice. He ended his employment with Arizona Post the first week of January, and he's going out into his own practice doing lobbying consulting. We're excited for him and in all his future endeavors. I will bring him back and offer the invitation for him to come back at a future meeting to present him with his plaque based on the timeline. We just didn't have enough time to get the plaque and get him on the agenda for today. We are in the process of hiring a replacement for him. I joked because we started last week. DPS HR does our hiring, and they have been phenomenal. They got him in for a polygraph last week. He passed, and they're just doing the final background process for him. And hopefully by next month, he'll be on board, and I'll be able to announce who that is. A couple other things. Last week, Marie Dreyer, in her role as the COPS director, president, I can't remember the title, president, I believe, hosted a blood drive here in the office on Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. She had 19 people come in and donate blood. So it was very successful. And again, Arizona Post is always proud to partner with COPS in this vital endeavor. A couple other things. We talked about some technology upgrades. After today's meeting, we'll be bringing in our contractors to start working on the boardroom updates and upgrades. It'll be up and running for our February meeting, and it'll just make us more efficient as far as when we show videos, as well as teleconferencing options for chiefs and sheriffs or any board members who aren't able to attend in person. A couple other things that we're doing starting next month, we've partnered with Blue Peak Technology, who is our current vendor for our comprehensive final exam testing. I went out last year with Cindy Sawyer up to the NARDA Academy, and I was shocked when I saw her pull out a Scantron form to give to all the students, as well as a Scantron machine that records the data. I believed we could do things better. Kip Rustenberg, Dan Wilson, and Marie Dreyer have been working with our vendor, and beginning next month, we're hoping to do a test program with the Phoenix Regional Academy where we're issuing the comprehensive final exam all electronically. I think it'll be much more efficient for us, and I think it'll be easier for the students who are taking that test. Once we get successful completion of that and we were comfortable moving forward, we'll roll it out to the other 10 full-time academies as well as our 4 open enrollment academies. And then additionally, we'll be able to use it for lateral candidates who are coming in from out of state. Again, it's just going to be incredibly more efficient for us. And again, I laugh because they were starting to phase out the Scantron forms in 2020. Last thing I want to talk about is Dan Wilson, our Chief Technology Officer. We brought him on about 6 months ago. He's doing a phenomenal job with a lot of our technology upgrades. We're upgrading this weekend. We'll be upgrading to new tablet or laptops for all of our staff, which again will make us much more efficient. We're out in the field working. And then also as part of a state mandate, he is already about a year ahead of where we need to be, reference moving all of our information storage to the cloud. He's been working very closely with the Arizona Department of Administration on that project. And a couple weeks ago, we flipped the switch and moved over our internal system to the cloud, and he's moving everything else over to the cloud. So we're probably about a year ahead of schedule. So again, he was a phenomenal hire for the Arizona Post Board. And Mr. Chairman, with that, I would end my director's report, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Board, have any questions? Doesn't appear so we'll move on to consent agenda.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you, sir. If you members of the board have a consent agenda in front of you, you've had a chance to review it. Questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, Andy LaFever, I move that we accept the consent agenda as amended.
Tom Keller, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. As opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you. Mr. O'Donnell, we have a presentation.
We do, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to welcome Dr. Cody Telep and John Bottoma from Arizona State University, both from the Department of Criminology. As we talked about previously, we worked with them very closely to create a survey that we sent out to the 159 department heads across the state that employ peace officers. As part of that, we had just shy of 100 responses. And then at a suggestion from Dr. Telep and John, we actually, they worked very hard and presented to almost all of their criminal justice students, just to kind of give us both ideas. What do people that are leading organizations want from mainly focusing on pre-employment drug standards, and what do our future applicants and our future applicant pool, what are they looking at? What do they think is important from a pre-employment drug usage standpoint? So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Telep, and he's just going to give you a brief overview of what the survey results are. And just so you know, we're going to take that information, and we will work as a staff and a team to come up with recommendations for the board to consider, and we'll bring those back to you at a future meeting. And then once that's complete, then we would go through the entire rulemaking process, which, like I said last month, we've already gotten permission from the governor's office to open a docket or to request to open a docket. We just want to have all this stuff on the front end before we go into that, and we ask for permission from the board to proceed. So with that, I'll turn over to Dr. Telep.
Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you. Good morning, members of the board. Thanks so much for the opportunity to be here this morning and to speak a little bit about the results of these two surveys that we've been working on. As Matt said, we worked closely with Arizona Post staff, and we appreciate Matt and Ben and Kip and their invitation to work with them to bring some data to these questions about pre-employment drug use. So we conducted two surveys in the fall of 2019, one of chief executives, which I know some of you participated in, so thank you. As Matt said, we got 98 responses there. A good mix of agencies, about a third in the Phoenix metro area, about half with 25 or less officers. And then we also went to classes in the School of Criminology and Criminal Justice at ASU and got about 1,100 student responses. I'm going to present just some of the highlights here. You have the full results, the full descriptive results in a report we put together. And I'll note as well that we are happy to follow up with any additional information that you want from the survey or if there's things that need clarification. I'll mention some of the student findings as well as appropriate, but I'll focus in particular on the views of the chief executives. I'll start with marijuana experimentation. We asked a question to chief executives about what they thought about current standards, and you can see the majority, 54%, thought that the current standards were too harsh, with about 40% thinking they're just right, so very few thinking they're too lenient. I wanted to highlight two areas in which there seem to be some views that suggest some openness to more leniency. First, on the right here, you'll see when an applicant has used marijuana in a state where marijuana possession and sale is legal. And so you can see here about a fifth of chiefs there said that shouldn't be prohibited at all, with about a third suggesting that the standards for that should be more lenient than they currently are, with about another third thinking they should be the same as they currently are. And then a smaller percentage thinking they should be harsher than they currently are, more similar to what the standards are for other drugs. Pretty similar results when you look at marijuana that was used with a medical marijuana card. Again, about half of chief executives in that case either said that it should not be prohibited at all or should be handled more leniently than current marijuana experimentation standards. Student results here were similar, but actually students had even greater leniency here. So about half of students for both of these questions, we asked the same question of ASU students, about half thought that that this use should not be considered prohibited at all for applicants. Well, on the whole, students were actually a bit harsher. More students thought that the current standards were about right, but in the questions of medical use and states where it's legal, more students thought that shouldn't be prohibited at all for applicants.
So when you said the students thought they don't think that it should be prohibited at all, that they can smoke marijuana anytime?
In these two particular cases. So I'll note that we asked about in other cases, for example, in the case of where marijuana is smoked, they tended to view the current standards as more appropriate. But in the case where use was with a medical card or when it was used in a state where marijuana is legal, about half thought that shouldn't be prohibited at all.
Thank you.
We also wanted to look at changes and chief executive views over time. And so what you see here are responses to three questions that were asked both in a 2013 survey of chief executives and then on our survey that we just did in 2019. And what you can see here are some pretty rapid changes in views in just a six-year period. So on the question of whether legal use use in a state where marijuana is legal should be held to the exact same standard as illegal use, you can see that in 2013, about 70% of chief executives agreed with that statement. That's down to about 40% of chief executives agreeing to that statement in 2019. And then very similar results on these other two questions. So on the question of whether applicants who have used marijuana in a state where it's legal should have to wait 3 years to apply after their last legal use, about 75% of chief executives agreed with that statement in 2013. That's down to about just under 50%, about 46% of the respondents in 2019. And then on the third, in terms of whether if you've used marijuana in a state where it's legal more than 20 times in your life or more than 5 times since you were 21, whether that should disqualify an applicant, again, 75% of chief executives agreed with that statement in 2013. That's down to about 32% in our current survey. So certainly marijuana laws at the state level have changed very rapidly in the six-year period as well, but we see a pretty big differences in the responses to these particular questions comparing the 2013 survey to the survey we just completed. In terms of what chief executives would like marijuana standards to look like, there wasn't consistency across that, so a lot of different kinds of responses. About half of the respondents did express things about making the standards more lenient than they are, but there wasn't a single answer to what that should look like. It was an open-ended question. So some mentioned increasing the number of uses to a higher number, or some considered changing it so it's simply looking at a time window and no concern about number of uses as long as there haven't been any uses recently.
But Dr., recently wasn't defined.
I would say some noted 2 or 3 years, or even the same time window as now, but just not being concerned with total number of uses, as long as there haven't been any uses recently. Yes. I'd say, though, we have some summary in the report of the open-ended responses, but as you all well know, as many of you as chiefs, there's not one viewpoint about this, so some of their responses varied a bit in terms of their and how they felt those changes should be made. In terms of looking at other dangerous drugs or narcotics, so non-marijuana drugs, here it seemed chief executives were more satisfied with the current standards. So about two-thirds of chief executives here thought the current standards were about right, with about 30% thinking the current standards were too harsh. One area, though, that I know the board has dealt with in the past is the question of marijuana that is not smoked but is consumed as edible or in a brownie or in some other form. This is an area where chief executives pretty overwhelmingly would like to see this handled at least like marijuana experimentation and not be considered in the other dangerous drug category. So 71% of respondents thought that marijuana consumed as an edible, which is very similar for marijuana consumed in a pill or in an oral spray, they thought that should be handled like marijuana experimentation for marijuana that's smoked, with about 13% thinking it should be handled even more leniently than marijuana experimentation. And students' views here were fairly similar. Final area I wanted to highlight was the question about prescription drugs. So about three-quarters of chief executives think that prescription drug misuse or illicit prescription drug use should be a separate drug experimentation category. And in terms of what that actually looks like, I just wanted to highlight there are some differences when you think about the type of prescription. And so start with the misuse of cold or cough medicines or taking cold or cough or some sort of flu medicine that wasn't prescribed to you. In this case, you can see that about a third of respondents think that shouldn't be prohibited at all, with close to 30% thinking that should be handled more leniently than marijuana. So close to 60% thinking that should be handled in a way that's more lenient than current marijuana standards. Sort of in what you might think of as more middle category is the use of painkillers that weren't prescribed to the applicant. Here you see a majority think that should be handled more leniently than marijuana currently is, with about a fifth thinking it shouldn't be prohibited at all. That's a smaller percentage there. About 12% think it shouldn't be prohibited at all, 20% more leniently marijuana, and about a third the same as marijuana. So different views here than when it comes to cold and cough medicine. And then when it comes to stimulants, we gave the example in the question of Adderall and Ritalin. You can see here that about half of respondents here think this should be handled the same as other drugs, with about half thinking it should be handled either the same way as marijuana or more leniently. But you can see the views are not consistent across different kinds of prescription drugs. More openness to less leniency when it comes to stimulants. That was very similar for anabolic steroids. I'll note that in the open-ended response of what chief executives would like to see here, the majority mentioned thinking about the intent of use, and so wanting to have some guidelines that suggested that, for example, in the case of cold and cough medicine, if the intent was that you were sick and you took medicine that wasn't prescribed to you rather than you were trying to abuse a drug, that should be an important consideration. So I'll end there, but happy to take any questions now or at any point later that you have about the results or either of the surveys. Thank you so much.
I have a quick question. Yes. So if you go back to that last slide that you divided up into three categories, so that would require us as a board or as post to have some kind of policy that delves into what was taken and for what reasons, whereas now we kind of have to cut and simply you use a drug that wasn't prescribed for you, and that's a violation. So that gives a lot more subjectivity or subjectivity? I haven't got those two straight. But whatever it is, it gives more interpretation of a lot of other variables for us to make a decision on whether or not it's going to be an automatic disqualifier.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say, and I'll, of course, defer to you all in terms of what that looks like in the rulemaking process, but there were these differences that emerged, and that at least it appeared in our survey that chief executives think about different kinds of drugs a little bit differently, and certainly I think view drugs that have a medicinal, if there's a medicinal need for such drugs, they view that differently than perhaps on stimulants, where the thought might be that if students were using, or anyone was using that, but in the case, I know some of the cases you have dealt with have been students who might have used those for studying or something in college, that maybe wasn't the same as they had the flu and they took, they took some medicine that was going to help them deal with the flu but wasn't actually prescribed to them.
Thank you. Question? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So I find it interesting that you guys lump stimulants in together with Ritalin and Adderall, even with methamphetamine or cocaine, and then because I think there should be a demarcation in that kind of look. But where were the students of your 1,137 students? Where were they on Ritalin and Adderall, and did they even know that it was illegal to share it amongst themselves?
So I'll note that on the first part of your question, we did ask the chief executive separately about a series of questions that were about prescription drugs. And so, yes, I mean, if someone was prescribed some of those, I would say, like, I would think the chief executives, when they were approaching that question, weren't thinking about cocaine, for example, but there could have been other stimulants that were prescribed or misused that weren't prescribed. But we did focus that series of questions on prescription drugs. In terms of the student views, they were actually fairly similar. They were actually, I would say, if anything, a bit harsher on the question of painkillers. They had less openness to painkiller use, but the results on the question of stimulant use were fairly similar. And I would say, on the whole, if anything, the students tended to be, I don't know if harsher is the right way to describe it, but overall, their views about drugs, they tended to have a little less openness than the chief executives, except, I'd say, the one main area where students seem to have views that were more lenient was on the question of certain types of marijuana use, particularly medical marijuana use or use in a state where it's legal.
Because we see here a lot that the young applicants who used Adderall that belonged to somebody else for a test or for some athletic performance ability didn't even know that, or claimed to not have known that they were not allowed to share that or use that or realize the consequences of doing that. So I was just curious where they were. Thank
you. Cody, if I could interrupt.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, Colonel Milstead, there is a specific question in the survey to the students that does ask use of prescription stimulants, and it gives the example of Ritalin and Adderall and asks their response regarding if it's not prescribed to the applicant. So we did drill down into that.
And I will say that particular question, 40% said it should be handled the same as other drugs, 24% said it should disqualify an applicant, 21% said to handle it the same as marijuana, and then less than 10% each for more leniently than marijuana or shouldn't be prohibited. So I think that's a case where, if anything, students were perhaps had a even, again, harsh isn't the right exact word for it, but yeah, more than some of the chief executives. So that was something that that was a question we talked a lot about because we thought the same thing, that perhaps students would have more openness to some use of that, but they did not seem to be especially open to that.
Thank you. Other questions?
Mr. Chair, just so I'm understanding the first slide with the medical marijuana and the state where it's, I mean, if I'm reading that correctly, then it's split roughly 50-50 between the chiefs or the chief executives that thought things were pretty much where they should be and those that thought it should change a little bit. So, I mean, not to make things clear as mud, but it's not like we got a real clear direction from those two answers on a direction that the board should move.
When I was here running through this on Monday, I said, I bet the board is going to wish that everyone had the exact same response. It would make it a lot easier. But I think, yes, I mean, I highlighted these two because these were areas where overall 54% of chief executives thought the standards were too harsh. But again, yeah, that's just slightly more than half. And then these two in particular were questions where half or a little more than half felt like gave a response that would suggest a standard that's more lenient than is currently being used. But again, that also means that the other half are pretty satisfied, or in some cases think the standard should be even harsher. or more conservative. That's a better way to phrase it.
Further questions? Comments? Thank you, sir. Thank you for your
Thank
work.
You.
Appreciate it very much. So, Matt, I do have a question for you, and I've heard before the doctor presented sort of your plan on where we're going, but I think in light of what I just saw, it makes it a little bit more confusing in terms of there's no clear direction for you. And so I don't know if this helps get to a point where you have recommendations and how you plan on getting there, but if you could just one more time kind of present that to us, so I feel a little more comfortable in terms of where we're going.
Absolutely. And to Dr. Telp's point, we were hoping for a little more clear direction from the agency heads. But so we're going to do is digest, because he only gave you a snapshot, we're going to digest the entire report, go through it as a staff, come up with several recommendations for the board to consider, and see if we can all come to a consensus of where we'd like to go in the future. And I'm hoping to have that done in the next couple months for you, and where we can present that. And then again, if the board itself has more clear direction, we'd be open to that as well.
Okay.
There is some confusion, and we've been talking about this for the whole time I've been here. There's been some confusion over our drug standards, and we do need to get clear, a clearer direction of what the board would like to see and what Arizona law enforcement as a whole would like to see. And that's what I'm hoping we can provide you the next month or two for consideration.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
And Matt, I would just say that because of some of the ambivalence with direction, I think that actually lends to giving the board the ability to help an easy post to shape this in a way that's palatable for those of us that consistently sit here and review these cases. So oddly enough, I find that reassuring that they're looking for some direction. So
good. Thank you, sir.
Further comments?
Good morning.
Are you answering my question, or are you the next agenda item?
I was waiting.
All right. You're a little bit ahead of me. So next agenda item F is a request for a waiver from the Cochise County Sheriff's Office. And Mr. Brockdale, I guess you're presenting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Mark Brockdale, Assistant Attorney General on behalf of Arizona Post. The next two petitions are submitted by Cochise County Sheriff's Office. To my left, seated down, is Lieutenant Tenney, who will be presenting on behalf of Cochise County. The first petition is in regards to applicant Austin Shaw. And about and slightly over 3 years ago, he legally purchased marijuana in the state of Colorado. That by itself does not merit the petition. It would not be a petition because it was over 3 years ago. But what he did was he consumed it in the form of an edible. He consumed marijuana in the form of an edible. And pursuant to the board's rules under Rule 105, it is a narcotic and it cannot be consumed within the past or last 7 years. So that is why the board is here today. The Cochise County Sheriff's Office has submitted a written petition asking the board to waive that minimum qualification in Mr. Shaw's case under Rule 103G. In your board communication that is in your packet, it discusses the standard under 103G that the public safety is not jeopardized by the waiver and that the best interests of law enforcement are served. If there are no questions for me, I believe that Lieutenant Tenney would like to address the board. The commander, excuse me. It's Commander Alanon from the Cochise County Sheriff's Department.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is a terrible segue to just what you're dealing with in as a board. I wish you the best of luck on that future. Austin Shaw came down to Cochise County. He's been coming down to Cochise County for about 4 years. He, one of our residents went up to college there at a place called Fort Lewis College in Colorado and played football with Austin. And that's how Austin became familiar with Cochise County. his friend put in for the sheriff's department, and Austin put in at the same time with him. And when we ran the background, that's when we ran into the problem with the marijuana. Austin is has been working in the Cochise County Jail for approximately a year. He's a big, strapping young man, very compassionate, very well spoken, and we really feel that he would be a real asset to the sheriff's office in coming into a deputy position. Quite frankly, he's would probably be our poster person in the future, and definitely put him into a community policing position with the sheriff's office. We don't see that he is going to be a habitual problem on anything, let alone we feel that his use of marijuana was experimentation and basically one-time use based on friends and peer pressure at that point in his life. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, sir. Any questions?
Mr. Shaw's age now.
24.
I do have one comment, Commander, and I don't know if the sheriff warned you about me or not, but here it comes. It's not about you. My problem with this is that we have, and in light of what we just saw, we have automatic disqualifiers. And we've been seeing a number of requests for these things in the past, and we've been granting them. The problem with this one I have is that this is asking us to forgive an automatic disqualifier when it's less time than if it had just been marijuana. So forgiving 7 years to less than 3 years. In March is 3 years. If you're standing here in March, I would vote for this. I would support this because of our past votes. My concern about this, if we pass this, forgiving a 7 year, less than 3 year, we might as well throw out our automatic disqualifiers and say, just come forward and not waste your time, just send your candidates forward. My concern is also, is this candidate sitting in a classroom right now?
Yes, he is.
And we've seen this before, and this is another one of those issues where if we determine the board does not support this, then you've lost the candidate in the seat, you've lost a seat in the academy, you've lost other candidates who could have been in those seats that you passed over to put this candidate in the seat, and it puts this board in a very awkward position. I'm not going to vote today. The good news is I don't vote today because I'm the chair unless there's a tie. But if I were voting, I would not support this because of that reason. You come back here in 2 months when there's 3 years since last use, and I would grant that waiver. And this board has granted that waiver consistently. But in this case, short of the 3 years, I just don't feel comfortable supporting it. And that's just my position.
He actually started this week into the academy. We had discussions with Arizona Post staff, and we explained our position, being short-staffed and what have you, trying to get people into the academy and fill positions within the sheriff's office. We got the authorization to put them in. We knew that that is a risk, in that we know that if his waiver is not approved, that, you know, we're going to have to pull him from there. We would prefer that he continue on. And I know that we're talking a time frame of March, or with a three-year limit on that. It's just that in law enforcement, sometimes trying to find people to work on these outlying areas, such as Cochise County, at the wages that Cochise County pays. You know, when you get a chance and you got somebody that's going to look real good for you in the future, you really want to hang on to them. So this is the case where we knew he was looking good. We asked him if he was willing to go into the jail. He's been in there for about a year, and work with us and see if we can get him into the academy. So that's why we're taking it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
When will he be certified as a peace officer? When does that class graduate?
Curtis, when's the class graduate? June?
I think it's 17 weeks of start and on the 13th. So March.
So June would be, so if we granted this, then he would be past the 3-year mark when he actually was certified.
Oh, yes.
You know, I'll make one other comment. It's interesting. Is Mark Daniels, the sheriff who's asking for this, is actually one of the most harshest on these drug uses. So obviously he too sees something in this individual. So anyway.
Any other questions from the board? Comments?
Mr. Chair, I have a question. At what point in time did this use come to light? Was it part of the
background investigation?
For the deputy position or for the detention position?
No, for deputy position.
So it didn't come out during the detention process?
No. We offered him the detention position, but we started the background as a deputy position. And
you indicated he'd been in detention for a year?
Yes.
So I'm wondering if the background process is different, if there was an opportunity for this information to come up previously, or if it came up just because of the deputy process.
Yeah, both of them are run basically similar. The only difference would be his polygraph examination.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Chairman, can I interject?
Yes, sir.
I just want to make sure that I'm clear on what Mr. Bischoff's question was for the commander. My understanding from your presentation was that during his application process originally for a deputy position, you found out about this marijuana use, which precluded him from becoming a deputy.
Correct.
Therefore, you put him into the detention academy, correct?
Correct.
Does that answer your question? So it did come out during his original application, and now after a year of successful service, now you're opting to petition him to become a deputy.
Correct.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Bischoff?
It does now.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for clarification.
Mr. Chair, Lisa Wise. Is there a problem with post and or the AGs if the motion's made to take effect in March as opposed to immediately?
I'll refer to my attorney for that one.
Mark Brachtel with the Attorney General's Office. That type of a prospective motion or order is questionable. It's questionable that it can stand on its own. So my advice would be from the state would be to not do that, to avoid that. Other options of the board do include, though, if Cochise County decides to withdraw its petition and refile it in March, because if March is a demarcation date that's important to the board, then Cochise County can withdraw their petition and refile it. That would be Cochise County's call, or the board, if Cochise County wishes to proceed, the board will vote.
Mr. Chair, I have a question. Matt Medina, if we don't grant the waiver, that means they can't come back in March. So if we deny the waiver today, they would not be able to come back in March.
Denying the waiver to refile it within that short of a time period, there has to be a change of circumstance. The rule states that there has to be a change of fact or facts that warrant the refiling.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Lisa Weiss, cannot the board make a motion to table this item until March as opposed to making them refile or the inability to refile?
If the board wishes to table, then to be brought back to the agenda 3 months from now, then Cochise County would have to be back here. It's my recommendation that the cleanest way to achieve that type of result would be if Cochise County withdraws its petition today and refiles it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
So, Mark, Matt, I guess, Frank Milstead, DPS, the presentation that the good doctor just gave us addresses just this issue of, and maybe I don't understand this right, I know that the rule is that if you eat it, it's a narcotic, if you smoke it, it's grass, but and I don't know how it got to be different, we're still talking about tetrahydrocannabinol and its effect on the human body, but that is exactly the issue that's on the table now, is that the same as smoking it, is when you consume it, and then why is it different? But right now, is there any science to why it's different that I don't understand?
As far as science, I would defer to the executive director, but as far as the law...
You give me much more credit than I deserve, Mark.
Colonel, I try to front-load anticipating questions, and that's when I did. So I thumbed through Title 13, and in 3401, our legislature defines the extract from marijuana that's in the form, which would be in the form of an edible, as a narcotic. So we have state law that defines a brownie or an edible under these circumstances as a narcotic by state law definition. So that's how I believe that's how we get here, sir.
Thank you.
So, Commander, I don't know if you want to call a friend? I'll call Mark.
My question then would be to the Post Board. Could we continue with them in the academy?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, that's been a question we've been debating for the last several months. And if you look at our statutes and on the advice of our counsel, there's nothing in the post rules that allow us, although we host and we provide the curriculum and we provide the comprehensive final examination, there's nothing in the rules that allows us to say yay or nay if someone can enter or stay in the academy. What we do have the authority to do is we cannot issue a comprehensive – we will not issue a comprehensive final exam to that candidate until the board gives us the permission to do so through something like a petition. So in answer to your question, Commander, we don't have the authority to tell you or Cochise College Academy to remove that applicant. We just would want to make sure you understand, though, that until this is resolved by the board, we don't believe your candidate meets the minimum qualifications. Therefore, we would not issue a comprehensive final examination, even if the academy ended prior to this being resolved. Hope that answers your questions.
It's kind of like Jeopardy.
Is there a way to postpone this to give the commander some time? Or can we do that on the agenda, bring it back later? I don't know how that works.
Today?
Yes, give me some time.
Yeah, I don't think that's a problem.
Okay, would you like a little bit of time?
Yeah, I
don't blame you.
I probably definitely need to...
You want my phone?
Talk.
No,
no,
speed
down. I'll speed
down. He should know this is coming.
Yes.
All right. So what, is there a motion to do that? Help me out. We've never done this before.
Mark, we need a motion for that? I'm not sure.
No, Mr. Chairman, you don't. It's still on the agenda. It's still going to be finalized today. There'll be a decision, so it's just postponed for later on during our meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Sorry. What just happened?
Put this off to later on in the meeting to come back to it.
Okay.
Okay. Good time for thought. You okay with that?
Yeah. Right. Well, you yelled at me last week, so I'm glad you yelled at the commander.
I didn't yell at the commander. He's just unfortunately marked today. Okay, that brings us to the next agenda item. Agenda item G, Cochise County Sheriff's Office petition for another candidate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mark Brechtel. Again, in this case, it's applicant Carlos Farah. And the facts of the case distilled to the bare minimum is that he consumed a dangerous drug twice. Once in 2009, he consumed spice, and then in 2012, he consumed ecstasy. The standard for the board is that a minimum qualification, which he does not meet, is that he consumed more than one time a dangerous drug over the age of 21. So he doesn't meet that minimum qualification under 105. Your rules do permit a petition. One has been submitted by Cochise County under Rule 105. And the test for the board will be as indicated in the board communication. And at the bottom of the board communication is listed out the factors that the board should consider and whether to granting a waiver under 105C. I believe that the commander would like to present. Any questions of me?
We should ask him. Yes, sir. Please. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome back.
Carlos Farah is, when he arrived in the Sierra Vista area, is quite frankly a Mexican national. He attended high school in the city of Sierra Vista at Buena High School, and pretty much born and raised in the Cochise County area. Entered the military in all places where he got his naturalization, became a U.S. citizen, was in Rome, Italy during his tour, his three-year tour there. After his time in the military, he held various jobs and finally landed over at Cochise County in the detention center, where he's been in the detention center for 3 years doing, from what I understand, excellent work. Carlos has seen that he wants to move on farther in law enforcement and has asked to become a deputy with Cochise County Sheriff's Office. During the background investigation, these things came up, and we are here petitioning the board for the waiver to allow him to continue. He is in the academy along with Mr. Shaw, and we would like to see him continue on and eventually become a deputy for us.
Thank you, sir. Any questions, comments from the board? Yes, sir.
Commander, how old was Mr. Farah when he used these drugs?
He was 21 years of age at that time, and he is 32 now.
Other further questions or comments? Seeing none, the board will entertain a motion.
Frank Milstead, Arizona Department of Public Safety. I make the motion that we accept Sheriff Daniel's request for a waiver for Mr. Carlos Ferreira and allow him to become certified as a peace officer in light of the violations that occurred some 11 years ago.
Lisa Weiss, I second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further comment or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. As opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Tom Kelly. Oh, and we have three nays. A motion carries. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Brings us to item H, the Little River Police Department petition for applicant Jesus Vio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. So in front of you is a petition by the Gila River Police Department on behalf of applicant Mr. Treviso. There are two minimum qualifications currently which are not met by the applicant in this case, and so it is recommended that the board consider a two-part analysis. First off, in your board communication and in the petition submitted by Gila River is a description of conduct by Mr. Treviso in 2003 when he was 15 years old. And at that time, as it's described in the petition, he committed delinquent acts, and he self-reported that he broke into a school, and he left the school with after committing some criminal damage with some friends, took a fire extinguisher. Our recommendation is that the board consider that conduct under the juvenile and discretion portion of Rule 105D. So although this is conduct which is grounds to deny, it can be permissible if the conduct is determined to be juvenile in discretion. The second part of the board's analysis today is regarding Mr. Treviso's conduct when he was 18 years old, and that was in 2006. During that year in 2006, he brandished a shotgun twice. So, and that's described in the petition. So, a little more background on this case is that a compliance specialist conducted a new hire audit on Mr. Treviso in December of 2019. And it was the post-compliance specialist who saw these and had concerns that Mr. Treviso was not a qualified candidate, and Post decided not to pass the new hire audit for the reasons that are for the conduct that is in the petition. The concern of the compliance specialist in Post is that the conduct from 2006 and then Mr. Treviso's conduct as a child is a offense involving physical violence and is also a pattern of conduct. That's the concern of Post, and ultimately it's the board's expertise and experience that decides whether that is the case. If so, then Mr. Treviso, his agency can petition the board for a waiver and under 103G. And that is what has occurred today. So Post did conduct its own check and could not locate that any of these incidences the shotgun incidences were reported to the police department. There was no police report. And to Post knowledge, there was no arrest, nor was he charged with, and that the information came to light because of his self-disclosure during his hiring process. So once again, it will be the board's determination under 103G whether to grant a waiver. And I believe the LT would like to speak if there are no questions of me.
Questions? Thank you, sir. Welcome, Lieutenant.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. It's an honor to be here in front of you all this morning. I'm going to go ahead and just start in on my story here with Mr. Treviso. It's Jesus Treviso. I had the opportunity to conduct a command interview with Jesus Treviso over 1 month ago, and a follow-up interview on Friday, January 10th, 2020. I learned the following about Jesus. Jesus was raised with his sister by an independent single mother in South Phoenix near 35th Avenue and McDowell Road. At the age of 14, he and a peer did jump a fence surrounding the Isaac Middle School, and this is all self-disclosure that he admitted to us, and they pushed open the door to a school bus and entered it. They discharged a fire extinguisher inside the bus, and then they obtained two more fire extinguishers that were in two of the other buses, and they discharged them as they ran down the street. He was 14 at this time. I know he's got listed there 15, but he verified it was actually 14. During the interviews, Jesus advised the incident involving the bus was a turning point in his life. He had already experimented with marijuana by the age of 12, and now he had engaged in this activity involving the buses. His neighborhood was a rough one, with an old OG gang member that lived next door to him and several gang members that lived just a few houses down from his home. After sincere talk with him and between him and his mother, he decided to turn his life around at that point at 14. At that point, Jesus decided to join the Phoenix Police Department Explorer Program. He quickly rose up the ranks as a police explorer and gained the rank of captain in just over a year. During his tenure as a police explorer, he had been threatened by the neighborhood and continued to live among the gangs roaming his neighborhood. He had witnessed a crime and chaos brought on by such individuals, not only as a police explorer on ride-alongs, but also there in his own neighborhood. Jesus remained captain with the Phoenix Police Explorer Program for the next 3 years until he turned the age of 18. At that point, as we all know, the Explorer Program, you can no longer go further. He applied for the Phoenix Police Municipal Security Guard Program, but he was unsuccessful at that point. As soon as he was of legal age, at 18, he purchased a shotgun for his family's protection. He kept it in his vehicle and in his home. In reference to the incidents outlined, they occurred over 13 years ago. Mr. Treviso stated he never once pointed his weapon in the direction of anyone, and in those two occasions, he only displayed the weapon to divert what he believed was going to be an armed conflict. These incidents occurred near his home and in the gang-enriched area. In 2008, Jesus had been working for over 2 years as a loss prevention officer at Target. When he offered to work on a co-worker's vehicle, he completed the work and drove the co-worker's car back to Target. He had placed his shotgun in the car for protection as he traveled. Jesus showed his co-worker and the work completed on the vehicle, and he was joined by his Target manager. He was terminated the next day after it was determined that he had violated employee policy by bringing the firearm onto the property. Looking back in review, Jesus Treviso told me that there were no other incidents involving a weapon. He also stated he would have done things differently now and not have escalated the situations as he had allowed it back then. He's learned over time. Jesus Treviso was never charged with these incidents, as Mark had explained. These occurrences have all been self-disclosed by Jesus. He chose to come forward and to be honest with his background investigator. Even though his decision-making skills were lacking over an incident that occurred when he was 14 years old, over 17 years ago, he made the commitment to change by joining and serving and excelling in the Police Explorer program. And again, at the age of 18, over 14 years ago, he admits to making hasty decisions and letting things escalate. He learned from all this. Jesus Treviso has grown from these experiences. He has grown to become a husband and a father and has been working successfully since 2013 with the United States Postal Service. He is now in charge of training. In our world, where it is becoming harder to find police recruits with honor and integrity, the Gila River Police Department is willing to step forward on this man's behalf and give him the opportunity he wished at a young age and continues to wish for as a man who he is today in our presence. I stand before the board today, respectfully asking for your consideration and approval to allow us a chance to afford Mr. Treviso the opportunity to train, to serve, and learn as a police officer within this great state of Arizona and the Gila River Police Department. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant. Any questions for the Lieutenant? Any comments? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, it's kind of an interesting legal issue here. In 2010, I think, they actually changed the justification statutes to allow an individual to brandish a firearm under certain circumstances. I'm not sure that statute would have been in play in 2006 or 2007. But I think under the facts that you've given me, that justification statute would probably apply in this case. So I'm not even sure we have felony conduct here. As a prosecutor, I'm not sure if I were reviewing these facts, I would even have charged him in 2007 if the facts as stated are accurate.
Okay. So do we speak the process with that, or do we take a motion?
Just first of all, for the record, the last speaker was Mr. Ayler. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, what is your question, sir?
So the question is, in light of the facts that we may be reviewing something that really doesn't come under our purview or necessary to review, it's agency's decision, do we have to go back and verify that and just do away with this, or should we just move forward, make a motion, and deal with this issue as it is in front of us? And I don't know. We've invented some things today.
And Mr. Chair, it'd be my legal recommendation that there is enough there in the petition for the board to make a decision of whether to waive or not, regardless of whether there was a crime committed or not. It's the conduct and whether that was self-defense at the time or not. Post has nothing more to offer other than Mr. Treviso's account because it was self-disclosed and there is no record of it. Does that help?
Yeah, I think so. Does it help?
Yes.
Move forward. I'll entertain a motion if we're going to move forward.
I just have one question.
Oh, you have a question. Chair. Yes, sir.
So, in the dissertation we just heard, the applicant went into a school bus, but the document here says he broke into a school.
Middle school.
Which one is it?
He clarified that it was actually the bus barn, I guess, of the school. It was inside the fence of, that surrounded the Isaac Middle School.
And from my old police days, that's enough that that would be a fence structure. It would be the, yeah.
Okay, seeing no other further discussion or questions, Chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, Lisa Weiss. I move that the board grant the Gila River Police Department's petition for waiver. This includes the waiver of the juvenile indiscretion under 13.4105D and the remaining conduct under 13.4103G. Based upon the information submitted, I believe that the best interests of the law enforcement profession would be served and the public welfare and safety would not be jeopardized by granting this waiver.
Don Bishop, I'll second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Mark Brachtel again. I believe that Cochise County Sheriff's Office is prepared to address the board on agenda item F, and that's applicant Austin Shaw.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Commander? Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. We're requesting that the petition waiver for Austin Shaw be pulled at this time, and that we will undoubtedly, within a time period later, reapply for a petition.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Mr. Brockville, are we moving on to final action cases?
Mr. Chair, just one point. The way I interpret parliamentary procedure would be that since Cochise County requested, then the board should decide. And so it would be in the form of a motion granting Cochise County's request to withdraw its petition and to refile.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Any comment before we ask for a motion? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, Don Bischoff, I request or I propose motion that we accept the request from Cochise County to pull their item until a later date.
Sandy Seaver, a second.
I have a motion in several seconds. any further comments or questions? None. Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion carries. Again, thank you, Commander. Okay, that brings us to our final action cases, case 19093, Tyler G. Knight. Ms. Waite.
Good morning, sir. Members of the board, I'm Lori Waite, one of your compliance specialists. I'll be presenting this final action case for Steve Jacobs, who is out of the office today. Just to refresh the board's memory, the board initiated proceedings in this case on October 16, 2019. A notice of complaint was sent to Deputy Knight by regular and U.S. certified mail. The certified notice was returned to post unclaimed. However, the notice sent by regular mail was not returned. And to this date, he has not requested a hearing or made any contact with post staff. So in case summary, during the early morning hours of September 16, 2017, Deputy Knight responded to a single vehicle collision. When speaking with the vehicle driver, Mr. S.D., the driver admitted to having consumed one alcoholic beverage about 4 hours prior to the collision, and Deputy Knight stated to the driver and other responding officers and fire personnel that he could not smell any alcohol on the driver. But being that it was a single vehicle collision, coupled with the driver's admission to have consumed alcohol earlier in the evening, Deputy Knight administered a portable breath test. The portable breath test yielded a result of 0.115%, and a subsequent blood test resulted in a 0.117% blood alcohol concentration. At the end of his shift, Deputy Knight authored an investigative report where on two different forms he reported that his probable cause was the smell of alcohol, to include other factors as well, and the results of the portable breath testing unit. On December 20th, 2017, he submitted to a recorded telephonic interview with the driver's defense attorney, where he made the statement that, as far as my observations of him, was bloodshot, watery eyes. I could smell a sweet odor consistent with intoxicating beverage emitting from his breath. When asked about his experience in making DUI arrests, Deputy Knight informed the defense attorney that it was probably close to 10 or 12 arrests, when in actuality it was his second DUI arrest. Research by Arizona Post staff was conducted in past similar fact-based circumstances, and staff recommends that the board revoke peace officer certification. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from Ms. Wade? Seeing none, the board will entertain a motion.
Paul Eiler, I'll make a motion that we accept the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and impose a sanction of revocation.
Do we have a motion? Do I have a second?
Don Bischoff, second.
So a motion and a second. Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Brings us to our new cases. To move to case number 18-156, Barclay G. Perry.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good to see you.
Members of the board, good to see all of you. Welcome back, Ms. Weiss. Good to see you again. This first case, Barclay Perry was a recruit in the Phoenix Police Regional Academy, appointed by the ASUPD, Arizona State University Police Department. To back up a little bit, to lay some foundation, Mr. Barclay was a swim coach, volunteer coach at a local high school, a girls' swim coach, in 2017-2018 school year. In 2018, he began the process, the hiring process with ASUPD, and was appointed for the academy in August of 2018. In November of 2018, the Gilbert PD was notified by the high school that they received allegations from some of the parents from the girls' swim team of some inappropriate conduct by Mr. Perry. So Gilbert PD reached out to Mr. Perry, asked him if he would come in for a volunteer criminal interview, which he did. During that interview, Gilbert PD relayed the allegations that came forward to Mr. Perry. Those allegations were inappropriate conduct, comments that he made to some of the girls over the school year, some of the texts that he sent to them, maybe some inappropriate touching. Some of the girls said they didn't experience that. Some of them did. But it got to the point where he was texting them, and there was at least two girls that came forward and said that they received texts from him through the Snapchat application from his phone to theirs of him completely naked. Some were still shots. Some were videos. Some of them he was touching himself, touching his genitals during the video, and sending those to the girls, at least two of them that made those allegations. The parents came forward, told the school, so PD at Gilbert interviewed him on that. When they asked him, do you remember doing that? Did you ever send them any of that information? He said, I don't remember sending that. If I did, it was unintentional. I had a girlfriend at the time, and we would share photos of that nature. So I don't recall if I did send them there, but if they're saying I did, I probably did, but it was unintentional. There was no arrest made. He was allowed to leave. He went back into the academy. He never stopped the academy, but he went back to the academy the next business day. Unfortunately, he did not tell the academy staff at Phoenix that he was interviewed and had that police contact as a possible suspect in a felony. They interviewed him at the academy. They asked him why he didn't tell them. He said he didn't think he had to. It was voluntary. That Gilbert PD said you didn't have to tell the academy staff, and they said, well, you do, and he was dismissed for not telling them that, not letting them know that he had that police contact. So Gilbert PD also notified ASU PD of the allegations. ASU did not open up an internal investigation on it. They simply terminated his probationary employment, Mr. Perry's, for failing to disclose those allegations and that conduct during that school year preceding the process, the employment process, felonious conduct. So at that point, Gilbert PD had already interviewed him. They did extract some photographs from Snapchat from a search warrant that they served that showed that he did, in fact, send some photos and videos of himself naked to underage children. So the girls that were in question were 15 to 16 years of age, and he probably was around 23 years of age. September 1st of 2017, they actually did document some of those photos that they received back from Snapchat. It took a while for Gilbert PD to send me the report. It was heavily redacted. I don't have a lot of names. I had to ask what were the victims' ages, and it was 15 and 16. To this day, I just checked. I haven't seen anything in the court system. I know the county attorney has told me that they're pursuing felony charges, but I don't see any at this point. That's where it sits today. Question.
Thanks, sir. Any questions? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, Don Bishop, I move that AC Post initiate proceedings in this case. Tom Kelly, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any comments or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. That motion carries. Brings us to case number 19-197, Christopher J. Rodden.
Yes, sir. Christopher Rodden was a police recruit for Yavapai County Sheriff's Office in November of last year, going to NARDA. On November 2nd of last year, during his weekend hours, Mr. Rodden was at a hardware store to purchase some items. He found a handsaw that he liked that he was going to purchase, and he saw a couple of other items while he was in there, some marking pens for the Sawzall and some staples for a staple gun. Unfortunately, he put the staples and the marking pens inside, concealed inside his sweatshirt, walked to the register, paid for the handsaw, but did not pay for the other items. He left the register, was exiting the store, and the scanner there went off and activated that there might be some items on his person that he hadn't paid for. The loss prevention folks contacted him, asked him if he had anything else that he hadn't paid for. He said no. They asked him to remove his shoes just to make sure he wasn't concealing it. Nothing in his shoes. Then at that point, he asked the loss prevention folks if he could use the restroom. He went to the restroom. There in the restroom, he removed the two concealed items and hid them underneath the trash can in the men's restroom. He left the restroom. Loss prevention folks came in right after that and found the items and approached him before he left the store and detained him. They asked him, hey, did you just leave those items in the restroom? And he said no. So at that point, they had already called Prescott PD, and when the officer showed up, the officer asked him why he didn't pay for him. He said that he didn't realize he had him in the sweatshirt until he was confronted about it, and he just made it worse, the bad situation worse, by refusing to acknowledge that he had him. And he said, well, why did you lie to the loss prevention person when he saw the stuff that you left there in the bathroom, the items? He said, because I just froze. I panicked. He goes, it was really bad at that point, and I didn't think they would believe me. He was cited at the store and released and dismissed from the academy, and his probationary employment was terminated. It is in the court system right now at the municipal court level, but nothing has really occurred on it yet on this position. And also I'll finish up with this. Arizona Post staff research similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board you do initiate proceedings.
Thank you, sir. Any questions or comments from the board? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Sure. Tom Kelly, make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Frank Milstead, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any comments, questions? Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion carries. Brings us up to case 19-126, Nicholas M. Horn. Ms. Waite.
Yes, sir. This is Nicholas Horn, formerly with Tucson Police Department. On May 28, 2019, Horn engaged in a heated argument with his girlfriend, who was also a fellow Tucson PD officer, in the residence that they shared in Tucson. During their argument, Horn struck the wall of their residence with enough force to create a hole in the drywall and informed his girlfriend that you're next. Officer Horn was interviewed and admitted to having long-term anger issues and hitting the wall. However, he informed investigators that his statement was not meant as a threat. He was simply indicating that his girlfriend would be the next to leave him. In April of 2019, Horn was charged with three different domestic violence statutes, threatening and intimidating, criminal damage, and disorderly conduct. In July of 2019, two of those charges were dismissed, and the third charge was dismissed in November 2019. The reason they were dismissed is this officer identified that he had an issue and he put himself in treatment before he was ordered to go into treatment by the court, and he successfully completed anger management classes. He was terminated from Tucson PD in August of 2019. However, he appealed his termination and had a civil service hearing where he was able to get his job back. As a result of that hearing, however, he was given a six-month suspension, which began in October of 2019 and will conclude April 22nd of this year, 2020. Staff had quite a bit of discussion on this issue, and as of today, we are recommending that you take no action with agency discretion. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So just so I understand, he would be back to work at Tucson PD in April of 2020?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the board? Comments?
Mr. Chair, just to qualify, the recommendation that's listed in our book is different than the one that you're making, correct?
Yes. As of today, we've changed our recommendation after some staff discussion.
Thank you.
Seeing no questions, the chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Matt Medina, I make a motion that we take no action on this matter.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Before there's a second, can I just ask?
Yes, absolutely.
Lisa Weiss, sorry about that. What changed?
Well, we had a discussion, and what staff felt was relevant is that he identified the problem and put himself into treatment prior to being ordered to do that by the court. And the court was impressed with that. The prosecutor's office was impressed with that as well. The charges were dismissed because he had successfully completed that program before he'd even been ordered to go, which would have been part of the diversion program as part of those charges that were set forth in July or in April.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Chair Don Bishop, I'll second the motion.
I have a motion. I have a motion. A second. Any further comments? Seeing none. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Motion carries. Nay, please. Benavide. Thank you. Motion carries. Thank you. Next case is 19-185, Leslie D. Warren.
Yes, sir. Les Warren, formerly with Pinetop Lakeside Police Department. During the night of January 4th, 2019, on duty officers at Pinetop Lakeside Police Department became involved in several different events involving a multitude of juveniles in town, which resulted in the call-out of Sergeant Leslie, who was off duty at the time. He first responded to the police department where he assisted with the booking of three different juveniles, and he was actually captured on department video pushing one of the juveniles, who was a 16-year-old male, into the wall. This particular male was handcuffed behind his back, and he was unable to prevent himself from being forced into the wall. No injuries were sustained by this 16-year-old. Following the booking of these three juveniles, Sergeant Warren responded to assist officers in town who had responded to a stolen vehicle report. After taking two juveniles into custody at the scene, Sergeant Warren was overheard by another officer on scene making a disparaging remark about the mother of one of the 13-year-old male suspects. The male suspect became upset by this remark and asked the sergeant not to speak about his mother that way, and Sergeant Warren responded by grabbing this male suspect by his hair and forcing him to the ground. He was also handcuffed at the time. He did not sustain any injuries. No criminal charges were filed in this case, and as I said, no injuries were sustained from the two juveniles in the two separate instances. He resigned from Pine Top Lakeside Police Department before they could hand down discipline from the internal affairs investigation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from Ms. Weiss? Seeing none, the chair will entertain a motion.
Oh, and we recommend that the board initiate proceedings, please.
Frank Milstead, initiate proceedings.
Tom Price, second. I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Got one more, but I should be able to cruise it, sorry. All right, next case, all right, 19-137, Michael N. Cardinal. Mark?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to recuse myself from this case.
Okay. So noted. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Dave Tepork, one of your compliance specialists. On July 3rd, 2019, while at dive training, former Bullhead City Police Officer Michael Cardinal was untruthful when he told Bullhead City Police Sergeant Brooks that he had been cleared by his doctors for full duty and that he was good to dive. When further asked if he had been cleared with human resources, Cardinal replied yes. On July 11, 2019, Officer Cardinal was untruthful when asked by Bullhead City Police Department Captain DeSantis if he had dived in training or missions. Cardinal responded by saying that he just swam in the training. During subsequent post-Garrity administrative investigation interviews, Cardinal admitted that he told Captain DeSantis that he went swimming. During a third post-Garrity administrative investigation interview, Cardinal admitted that he used the word swimming to just not make it sound as bad. This was due to the fact that Cardinal was on light duty and not permitted to participate in dive training. Arizona Post staff research similar fact-based circumstances and cases and recommends to the board that you initiate proceedings, and I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have any.
Board, any questions? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion and initiate proceedings. Tom Kelly.
Paul Waitler, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further comments? Nope. Not seeing any. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, sir. I have called public on my agenda. Is that happening today?
Yes, ma'am.
So is anyone from the public that would like to address the board? Seeing no one, future agenda items?
Just follow up to the survey results that were provided to us by Arizona State University today. Or anything else the board would like us to take a look at.
Does anyone on the board have anything to like folks to look at? Seeing none, thank you. And then I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
I'll sit and we'll be adjourned.
So moved. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.